Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Common App. That's short for the Common Application, which is used by more than 500 colleges and universities now. With a click of a mouse, a prospective student can apply to several colleges at once, thereby presumably increasing the odds of acceptance to at least one of them. But the impact of the Common App has not been limited to the applicant experience. Coming up, we'll hear from the trenches of the high school counselor, and we'll talk with the founder of a company that helps applicants find the right college for his or her needs. Joining us now to discuss the impact of the Common Application on the admissions process at a Big Ten university is Ohio State University's Director of Admissions, Vern Granger. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be back.
So the Common Application is a not-for-profit company. It was developed in 1975 to streamline the process. Obviously, this was pre-computer generation, but it's since been adopted and gone online. From where you sit, are the advantages of the Common Application to a school like OSU?
Sure. I think one great thing about the Common Application is, as the title implies, it allows for a common application for a student to submit, to have their application considered by a university. So if a student was looking at X number of universities, they would have to enter their name, they would have to enter their address, and a lot of other basic information all the times that they were applying to each of those institutions. Whereas with the Common Application, a lot of that information is entered one time and it can be used for several different institutions. So from the student side, it really makes the process a lot easier.
What about from the school's point of view?
Yeah, from a university like the Ohio State University, those students who are submitting that application, because of the ease in applying for admissions, a student may be looking at, say, the University of Michigan or another member school, and they may see that a school like the Ohio State University fits a lot of the same criteria that they're looking for in that institution, and they'll go ahead and submit an application for consideration by us.
Oh, so it's a little bit like a little bit of free advertising. It just kind of puts Ohio State out there to a larger number of prospective students.
Absolutely. What the Common App, us becoming a member of the Common Application, has done is it has allowed us to expand our reach to not just outside of the state of Ohio, but nationally and internationally for that matter, because of the ease of submitting the application.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Common App right now. That's what prospective students, seniors in high school, fill out to apply to most big universities and colleges in the country. About 517 are part of the organization of the Common Application. If you have a question or comment, my guest right now, Vern Granger, he's Vice President of Enrollment Services and Director of Admissions at Ohio State University. Have there been any unintended consequences? You told me before we went on the air, 43,000 applicants.
Yes.
It's a record this year. Mm-hmm. What doesn't work with the Common Application?
Well, I think one of the side effects of students, the ease of them applying for admissions, is that, you know, once upon a time you may have a student who was looking at two or three different universities, and so they would go to that institution's website or request a paper application and complete two or three different applications. Because of the ease with the process, now that student who may have applied to two or three is now applying to five or six different institutions. What that does for universities like the Ohio State is that we're trying to get a better sense of the folks who are actually applying to the Ohio State University, which of those folks that we admit are genuinely interested in Ohio State, and which of those students just submitted the application because of the ease.
Because this is a big process for OSU. It's important who you admit, and you want to make sure that you don't waste a lot of time and effort on someone who's, not really. They're much more interested in wherever.
Absolutely. I mean, it really makes us, we've had to really rethink how we think about applicants. And again, we're trying to get a better sense of those folks who are submitting the application. And so it requires us to do much more follow-up with the students to get a gauge of how truly interested they are in us.
If I'm a student and I really want to go to OSU, I've applied to four or five different places, but I really do want to go to OSU. My mom and dad have just made me apply to four or five different places, and they're paying for it because it costs.
Sure.
What could I do to get OSU's attention to make sure you know that's where I want to be?
Well, within the application, a student has a lot of control in submitting information that will get the attention of not only the Ohio State University, but any other institution. So I would absolutely encourage a student to submit those letters of recommendation.
Okay.
And be thoughtful in who they're selecting to submit those letters of recommendation. We give a student an opportunity to talk a little bit about themselves by way of a essay on a particular topic. And so really going into detail and being thoughtful in their response. Listing the activities that they're involved in, and we want to see students who have a passion for learning. And so the students who can articulate that by way of the personal statement, by way of the essays, by way of those recommendations that we receive from other folks, those are the students who are going to allow us to really get a better sense of why this student would be a great fit for the Ohio State.
Does Ohio State or any member college get to know how many other schools a student or an applicant has applied to?
We don't know it from the common application. So if a student submits that application to our university, to our knowledge, we know that they've only applied to our university. But anecdotally, and we have conversations with our Big Ten colleagues, and we were able to, at the end of the application cycle, get a sense of the students who applied to our university and who ultimately decided to go elsewhere through National Student Clearinghouse data, that we get an idea that we know that students are applying to multiple universities, and we have a good sense of who those peer institutions are that students are applying to.
Out of the 43,000 that applied this year, mm-hmm. how many, and this is for all the campuses?
For 43,000 for the Columbus campus.
For the main campus.
A few thousand more applied for our regional campuses.
So out of the 43,000 for the main campus, how many will you accept?
Mm-hmm. It's hard to say right now because, again,
It's
not a fixed number yet because, again, one of the things we're doing right now is looking at previous year's data, contacting students who we've admitted to the university to get a gauge of how interested they are in the university. And so by all of those bits of information that we feed into our models, we'll have a better idea very shortly of how many students we're ultimately going to admit. Just to give you a sense of a comparison, last year we received about 35,000 applications for freshman consideration, and we ended up admitting about a little over 17,000 of those students.
From 35,000 to 43,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, last year was supposed to be the huge confusion with the Common App. Mm-hmm. Did that, do you think, have an effect on how many eventually applied?
Yeah, I don't know if it was confusion. I think with the ease of the process, we had anticipated, just talking to our other colleagues at other institutions who made the switch to the Common Application, we anticipated an increase in the number of applications. So we were anticipating an increase not only for the fall of 13 class, but the entering fall of 14 classes as well.
How many years then? Just 2 years now?
This is our second year as a member of the Common Application.
Was it that extra access then to more eyeballs that is what inspired OSU?
I think that's one of the reasons, again, to be able to expand our reach to students just outside of Ohio and outside of the Midwest. But also, I think there's from a customer service standpoint, allowing students the ability to complete one main application and have that information be able to be considered by other universities. That was also in our thought process as well, to try to make the application process as seamless as possible for a student.
You said you had about 17 that you eventually admitted last year, 70,000?
A little over 17,000.
How many people work for you to do this, to achieve this?
We have a very, very big operation. I mean, we have a number of folks who will look at applications, because one of the things that we will guarantee is that every application will be reviewed by a member of the OSU staff. And so we have a number of full-time permanent staff. We also hire some seasonal readers during our reading time. So retired teachers, retired school counselors, those are the type of folks who make up our seasonal readers who will bring on during, again, that peak application reading time. So along with our full-time staff and our part-time readers, those seasonal readers, we have a good number of folks who are taking a look at applications. Because, again, we think it's important that all applications are going to be reviewed by a member of the staff.
Now, correct my math if I'm wrong, but if you had about 35 or 37,000 applicants last year, you accepted 17,000 of those. We're talking about like a 50% acceptance rate.
Yeah.
That's really high.
And I think that speaks to the fact of, I mean, not only the Common Application was one move that spoke to the increase in applications, but I just think more and more students, not only in the state of Ohio, but nationally, see Ohio State as that first choice institution. And so it really speaks to the quality of the programs and how well we prepare students that we're seeing those increases of students who are applying.
And are you seeing decreases of students applying who are not going to make the grade? There's been a lot of controversy over that, not necessarily over the years, over the last 10 years, as Ohio State's tightened up its requirements. Just they're not applying anymore.
Well, we're still seeing increases in our applicants to Ohio State. One of the great things about the structure of the Ohio State University is that we really do take seriously that land-grant mission. And so the regionals really play a great part in fulfilling that land-grant mission, that students are able to, no matter where they are in the state, if you're a high school graduate from the state of Ohio, you will have access to an Ohio State University education. So I think the regionals really, really help us to solidify that message that there is absolutely a place for you at the Ohio State University.
Public universities spend about $440 per student on attracting applicants. That's kind of a generalized number, but what about Ohio State? What do you spend to attract students?
I don't have the exact number, but I can just say that we really do there's a lot that goes in the recruitment of students and attracting them to our university. And it really starts as early as the freshman and sophomore year. I'm sure your listeners who have children, they probably have gotten one of our brochures that
they probably filled three or four recycling bins.
Exactly,
at least.
Exactly. And it's not just from our university.
From all of them.
It's all over the country. And what we're trying to do is get on students' radar. There are thousands, literally thousands of post-secondary universities out there. And so we're all trying to distinguish ourselves and let those students know that our university is the best place for them to achieve the goals and the dreams that they have.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. Coming up, we're going to continue our discussion, including the founder of College Liftoff. It's a company that was created to help find that good fit between a college and an applicant. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. The college application process has changed a lot, but fear not, it's still confusing and stressful. A lot of applicants still find the process daunting and difficult to finish without help. Many simply flail. Some reach out to a school counselor or maybe their parents. Others turn to specialized services designed to find the right fit. Still with us is OSU's Director of Admissions, Vern Granger. And Vern, thanks again for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
Joining us now is Aaron Green. He's founder of College Liftoff. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Hey, thanks, Ann.
So College Liftoff, good title for
Thank
a company to do what you do. It's one of the few services across the country trying to help students with the often daunting applications process. What inspired you to start this business in the first place?
That's a good question. It's a very good question. I was just telling Vern, a proud Buckeye. I graduated in 2006. I actually have a mechanical engineering degree.
All right.
From Ohio State. The long story short of it is I went through the college process as a high school student. I came from a single-parent family in Cincy. Mom sent me to a great high school, and it was a big sacrifice for her to do so. So I said, thanks, Mom. It's been a total blessing. I'm going to figure out how to pay for college on my own. My number one school at that time was Northwestern. Great school, dream school. Got in, fantastic. Price tag, $45,000 a year.
No questions about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we really had to look at and see, what could I really do with the education I really wanted to do, and how can I really afford it? I wanted to make sure that I was paying for the education on my own. She had done a great job before. Well, if I did the math, from Northwestern, they were giving me $15,000 a year to go to school there, and our EFC, expected family contribution, was five. So if I ran the numbers, 45 minus 15 minus five left me with $25,000 a year I'd have to take out in some form of loans in order to go to school there. Now, 25,000 multiplied by four is 100 grand.
Just for school.
Just for school. So I knew I wanted to go to school for engineering. If I really looked at what the outcome was, it was right at about a $50,000 to $60,000 career path. So the question I really had to ask myself then is the same question we ask with our students now. Is a $50,000 to $60,000 career path worth $100,000 worth of student loan debt? Well, now that question changes for a lot of different varieties and things, because Northwestern's a great school, top 12 in the country, excel at a lot of things. But the realities are, for me and my program specifically in engineering, all Big Ten schools are pretty darn good at it too. And particularly if I looked at U.S. News & World Report's rankings at the time, and I did, Northwestern was ranked right at around 22nd in my program, but OSU was ranked 24th. So what am I losing by value by going to Ohio State for the same degree?
For a lot less money, I
A lot less money. The average debt coming out then out of OSU was right at about $20,000 after 4 years. So it's literally $80,000 less for a degree that's just as valuable. And that's really what stirred my choice, because it was a school that I could come to. It was my third choice, but I came in, I fell in love with it.
You crunched the numbers very analytically. I'm sure it's that engineering mind of yours. When did you figure out that there are others out there who don't possess that kind of intellectual wherewithal?
Well, I tell you, it's as soon as I walked in the door at school, it was
miscast. Yeah, Island of Misfit Toys to a certain degree, or
a little bit.
Okay,
and you still see that as the same common thread today. Is education has gotten so expensive in this country? It's risen almost. In fact, it's the top rising thing that we've seen in the past 35 years. If we look at the Consumer Price Index in the past 35 years. The normal consumer price index has gone up right around 400%. Food has gone up 200%. Education has gone up 1,200%. 1,200% in 35 years. Even healthcare has only gone up 600%. So we've seen education inflate to literally the cost of an annual salary for families, which is just staggering. So looking at this and seeing that our families are, to be honest, sleepwalking through a process that's affecting not just their students' outcome as far as a career path, but also their own retirement now.
You know, Vern Granger, I know that a big reason for the higher selectivity at OSU has a lot to do with making sure you're getting the right students here so they can complete their education to affect the drop, you know, to start hit that. There was a lot of dropout.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly it. I mean, the university a few years ago was developing, trying to think of all the strategies to try to make sure that the students that we're bringing into the university are going to be ultimately successful and graduate from the university. And so yeah, that is exactly, you hit the nail on the head. That was one of the reasons why we did move to more of a competitive, holistic review, because again, we were concerned about those outcomes. The fact, and he hit on something wonderful, a great point that you any student who's entering a university, you want to make sure that that student is going to be successful. But he also hit on another great point, is in that there are many different options out there. And it's a conversation we have with students and families all the time. I mean, it's particularly about the Ohio State University, and we'll be talking to a family, and we'll actually have that hard conversation with them, is that, you know, they've gotten an offer at this school and in another school in addition to Ohio State University. And we want them to seriously have those conversations because, again, it is a serious investment. We think our university is wonderful, and we have a lot of great reasons why Ohio State would be a great choice, but it should be a family decision, and students really need to think about
and
that.
And it's not necessarily right for everybody.
Absolutely.
No matter how much you want to be a Buckeye, there are other things to think about, right, Aaron?
Yeah, we like to look at it as an investment in education, and how do you really break that down? Mm-hmm. For so long, we've really made emotional decisions when it comes to college. I got to be a Buckeye. My parents.
I know
here.
The school song. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah. The football team. All this great stuff. But now, with the magnitude of what we're dealing with, where we're dealing with something that's literally equivalent of a house that a kid is buying in the span of 4 years, $80,000 to $200,000 worth of education. Let's put some tangible metrics in place so that we can actually analyze the situation.
First of all, you mentioned you had used the term sleepwalking. How do you wake them up? If they've come to you in the first place, it sounds to me like they already woke up.
It's definitely an interesting process. We are college planners, and we really look at this thing as, how do we get the best value out of it? Our number one motto is, name something you spend $80,000 to $200,000 on and we don't consult professionals.
Mm-hmm.
Here we have higher education. A lot of the time, it really is a wake-up process, maybe even after the student goes to school, but we like to start with our kids in their sophomore and junior high school, where we're doing a lot of career development work with them and really focusing in academically, what is it that you're looking for?
So when the governor talks about getting people more focused at a younger age, you can relate to that then?
We sure can. In fact, that was an interesting segment we heard this morning about that. And it's great if we do something at the 7th and 8th grade level, but to be honest, we're not doing a great enough job at the sophomore, junior, senior level. Mm-hmm. A lot of students come to us with basic concepts of majors and what they want to do. Like a student will come in and say, I want to major in psychology,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. But the problem with that high school student saying that in any particular major is they just don't have a real grasp of the outside world yet. They're taking a term that they've heard repetitively every day or they've taken in class, and that's their view, that's their grasp. So what we have to do and what we do in our company with our students and what we love to champion more with high schools to do with their students is let's take their direct interests and see what's going on. The worst question we ask of our teenagers is, what do you want to do with your life? What do you want to major in? What do you want to have a career in? That's the wrong question. The question is, what do you want to affect? What do you want to be a part of? What really turns your motor? So that way they can start listing traits. And degrees and majors are cocktails of multiple things. They're mm-hmm. different mixtures. No one degree is ever one thing. So we want to take those traits and use that in order to put the real world around it to say, these are the jobs and careers that really focus in on these particular areas. That's what affects that world.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. So you don't just help a kid find a college. You try to start even earlier than that and help them figure out what they want to do when they grow up so that they get into the right college that'll help them achieve that
goal. That's exactly the case. I would say the vast majority of our time that we work on this process is with the student in the career development side. And it's such an important piece. The getting ready for college, it really depends on what it is that you want to go to school for. One of our partners in our company, Gina Jacob, specializes in corporate development. We wanted to really be able to look at that and see, how do we merge the two? Education and career development, and how do you get into the work world? The teenagers, that's the step that we're missing with our teenagers. So in order to develop that and find that process out, that can now put us in the ballpark for which schools are actually good at that particular subject. Because not all of your university is great at everything. So we want to focus on schools that actually do with the student's real direct interest and where their, so to speak, bubble really exists. Where is their wheelhouse? OSU is a great example. I went to school for engineering there. They are great in engineering, business, medicine. We have some great centers of influence there. We go to UC as a great example, too. UC's influences, the DAP school, Design, Architecture, Art, and Planning, is phenomenal, top 3 in the country. So why jump to a school in Massachusetts to go to school and spend $50,000-$60,000 a year for that? And you have a great school right down the street.
Because it's so expensive now.
Yeah.
Everything's changed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love the point that he brought up about trying to help students find their pathway, because I think one of the things, and I try to talk to students all the time about this, is that, you know, college is hard enough as it is.
Sure.
You're going into class, scheduling, it's already difficult as it is, and it's made even more difficult if you don't have a passion for what it is that you're trying to, that you're studying. And so I love the work trying to get students, you know, freshmen, sophomore years, to really think about those things that resonate with them, the things that make them tick.
And also to eliminate things, too, that they think they want to do, but the STEM programs in high school can be really valuable if you get them in there in their freshman year and they're like, no, I don't want to do
this. Exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not a wasted semester
if
you figured out what you don't want to do when someone maybe has been encouraging you to be an engineer. No, I don't want to do that.
That's totally the key. The key isn't for a student giving them too much choice, because the situation for a high school senior in today's world, they are literally facing the hardest situation we've seen before. They're facing the highest cost for education we've ever seen. Well, a market that's already saturated with bachelor's degrees, to be honest with you. 30% of freshmen are dropping out. 50% of those particular freshmen don't graduate. National average to graduate in this country is 6.2 years with a bachelor's degree. It's 2 years too long. And we have $1 trillion out in student loan debt. $1 trillion. So we have all of these parts and pieces that are going into it. And then we have universities now, like OSU, with over almost 200 majors to choose from. That is a daunting task for a high school student to bite onto. So if we can take them and show them, like, okay, let's break this thing down and not add choice, but eliminate choice and vet things out to get that down to the particular wheelhouse to where they really focus in on, that's where we want to be with a student.
Vern Granger, when someone's applying to OSU, is it an advantage or a disadvantage to say, I know what I want to do?
We would tell a student who is undecided about what they want to go into to indicate that on the application.
To be honest.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong. We have, for our folks who are undecided, we have an exploration program. And the purpose of exploration is to help students find that major that's going to be right for them at The Ohio State University. Mm-hmm. So if a student is undecided, they should go ahead and put that on the application, because the advising that they're going to be getting is going to be more suited towards where they are about being undecided. But starting that conversation earlier, I think, you know, we know that students change majors multiple times in college, and we know that that's going to happen. You know, if you're 18-year-old, your thoughts, your interests, they change. But the things that are probably not going to change are the things that you have a passion for.
Absolutely.
So if you can identify those things that you have a passion and you're good for, then at that point you understand that there are many different pathways that you can go into. So if this major is not good for you, you can find another major that may be more suited towards you by doing that early identification that he talked about.
It's a lot of what you said, Ann. Actually, that was pretty much dead on. A student will change their landscape, but at the core, if a student doesn't like math and is not good at it, they're never going to like math or be good at it, which is completely fine, because they may really have a great strength in writing, in creative writing or technical writing, and being able to adapt that and see what are the fields that really excel at that. Looking at the OSU Communication School, between the three breakdowns of new media communications, which is more of a computer science version of communication studies, versus practice and analysis versus strategic comm. Hmm. And if I can have a student at 16, 17 see the different aspects of how they can adapt their creative and technical writing skills to a real-world application early on, they're going to be a much better mm-hmm. student for you, because they'll be in and out after 4 years and they'll be honed into what they want to do.
Aaron Green, how do you pay for how are you paid for your services at College Liftoff?
We work strictly off of a retainer base. So it's just a one-time fee that they come in, the family will come in and work with us, and we're with them for 2 years, to say the least, and even longer sometimes if we start with them in their sophomore year. But we're with them through the entire process of planning for school. That goes through the career development side of it to actually finding the right schools that fit that student best. That includes looking at the financials. That's something we really haven't talked about, but the actual cost of school, mm-hmm. our philosophy about that is that the cost of education should be based not off of what the sticker price of that university is, but by the actual value of what that degree should yield. Because that's two different outcomes, very differently for a different school. The way that we buy education in this country is, I use an easy analogy. Like if I go to Starbucks in the morning and I buy a tall, skinny vanilla latte, it's $4.10. Now, the cost of that latte doesn't change based off of how much money I have in the bank or how much I made yesterday, does it? No, because that's fair market value. So why in the world are we buying degrees that way? Because right now, the cost of education is being based off of what the FAFSA says that the family has in the bank and what the university says the degree actually, their school costs. But we already know this. Not all majors and degrees are created equal. They're just not. So I could go to school for something that yields $60,000 a year or one that yields $20,000. Now, if I take on the same amount of cost and debt at this level that this student can afford, I'm in a world of hurt for years financially. And that's where we're seeing this as being such a problem. So let's take a look at it and say, this is how much education we should be buying.
And what about helping them find alternative ways to pay for it besides going into debt? I mean, a lot of times, particularly kids who don't come from a lot of resources, they don't know what's out there.
And that's it. It's just about knowing what's out there and how to utilize it. That's something we do thoroughly. In fact, that's one of my fun things every day is just investigating the financials of universities and how money really flows through the system. It's kind of an enigma completely because we see money come from multiple different places when your student goes to apply to it. And how do we really decipher that? But if we look at, and this is something we use on the technology piece, is using U.S. News World Reports to really analyze endowment sizes versus annual givings versus average starting or average financial aid packages versus gift aid versus debt, and how much student loan debt is each student walking out with after 4 years at a particular school.
So, Vern Granger, do you like hearing about this? Do you wish more families?
Yeah. Absolutely. I think the earlier
either self-educated.
I think the earlier that students can start doing the research and looking at it holistically. Looking at the fit, the programs, cost, all of those things, because they're all a part of the why a student should be ultimately selecting a university. So I applaud the efforts of what Aaron's company's doing, and there are a lot of other great resources out there. I would encourage students as early as possible to make sure you develop a strong relationship with your school counselors at your school to, again, start having these conversations earlier. Because the earlier you start thinking about these things and start sorting out in your mind, you know, what is going to be a great fit for you, not only academically, program speaking, but as far as the community, the campus itself. I'll be the first to admit that the Ohio State University may not be for every single student. I mean, we are a large university. There's no way you can sugarcoat that. We are a large university. Some students are going to thrive in that environment, and some students would thrive in a much smaller environment. So I absolutely love the approach of starting and having these conversations early and having very frank conversations, because they are very, very important ones.
Very serious. Well, Aaron Green, I want to thank you for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me, Ann.
Aaron Green, he's founder of College Liftoff. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We'll continue our conversation about the process of applying for college, getting into college. Coming up, we're going to have a school counselor join us. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. It's that time of year. Prom and graduation are several weeks away, but an acceptance or rejection letter, if it hasn't yet arrived, could be just around the corner. New technology has streamlined the college application process, but some applicants still are overwhelmed by the prospects and the pressure to decide. Still with us is OSU's Director of Admissions, Vern Granger. Joining us now is Granville High School Counselor Brandy Cooper. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us where we are in the timeline of a typical college-bound high school senior right now, Brandy. What are they all doing? What are most of them doing?
Well, most of them at this point are applying for financial aid. They should have the FAFSA done at this point.
Which is the financial aid?
Free application for federal student aid. Okay. And then they are applying for scholarships, local scholarships, statewide scholarships, whatever they can get their hands on. And then some of them are still definitely waiting for decisions from colleges that they've been applying to.
Now, Vern Granger, you've already accepted some students for next year. There's the early and there's the late.
Well, at this point, we've accepted a good number of our students. There are still a few more admission decisions that we'll be making. So we'll be rounding out our class in the next few weeks. And so our goal is to notify students at Brandy School and all throughout the state and country by the end of the month with our admission decisions.
Now, I'm pre-Common App.
Okay.
But I knew where I wanted to go. I applied to three schools. I knew I wanted to go to Michigan State. That was that. How, Brandy, complicated is it now? Because I hear about people taking their kids on trips all over the country and visiting schools. And how much a part of that are you? And what do you know about what they're doing with all of that?
Well, I would say I'm a huge part of that. We basically, at my school, we have a college counseling curriculum that we follow. And we try to help students 9 through 12th grade and just helping them to understand the process, understanding the importance of their grades, the courses they select, how rigorous those courses are, making sure that they have a strong GPA, while also thinking about who they are, what they want to be, self-awareness. We talk a lot about self-awareness, career exploration, and then going into the college search, such as what qualities are you looking for in a college, and then what are you bringing to the table as well, and trying to find that match.
Now, we're sitting around talking about this, and we all get what we're talking about, but I'm not sure I totally understood what all that meant when I was a sophomore or junior in high school. Mm-hmm. Are they developmentally, really, most of them ready to have those kind of conversations?
I think that everyone's on a continuum, and some are ready in ninth grade, and some are not ready till December of their senior year. So we continue to press on them and help them whatever stage they're in. We're not judgmental as far as where they're at. We just want to keep moving them along. So some kids know exactly where they want to apply junior year, and some are still figuring it out in November of their senior year. And so we just keep working with them and push them and try and say, Where do you see yourself? What do you want to do? We have meetings with families. Whatever we can do to help support them. We go online, do college searches together. So it seems to be working.
In your experience, has this process always been so stressful for students?
Well, I started, when I started in 2003, it was all paper-based. And so it has evolved into being all electronic-based. And for some students, that's daunting for them. And when you think about what the Common App is, the Common App is not, it doesn't mean it's easy. And sometimes there's this misperception that it's an easy application, but it's really the Common application with lots of little pieces and parts that you have to make sure you remember to do. And you have to make sure that you sound eloquent. In
500 words or less.
Right.
How do you like that, Vern Granger, that change from the college essay kind of free form to this, really, 500 words or less is extremely structured.
Yeah, the thing I think as a person who reviews application and just talking to my other counterparts at other universities, with the Common Application, there are several different topics you can choose from. So as someone who reads thousands of applications, to read about a variety of topics, it keeps our attention.
Okay, so it's partly about you.
Yeah.
Well, that's understandable. Mm-hmm. But do you feel like in that short of a span, you really get a sense about a student?
Well, I think it'd be hard to wrap up 18 years in 500 words. And so I think in combination with the essay, listing of their activities, looking at their academic record and their achievement, recommendations, I think all those things in combination, we can get somewhat of a picture of this particular student and whether or not they would be a good fit at our university. But I would be the first to concede that 500 words, it's going to be difficult to get the whole life of an 18-year-old in 500 words.
Well, absolutely. And as a writer, I would think it's a great it's a great exercise. It's a great mental exercise, but it certainly can't be to achieve that goal to get your whole life. It's about something that's really important to you, or a topic that really matters to you. Erin Green was just with us, founder of College Liftoff. And I was wondering, Brandy Cooper, as far as the kids at Granville High School, where you're a school counselor, to what extent do your students use services like College Liftoff or College Essay Organizer or that kind of a thing?
I would say that there are a few families that may have private consultants or use services like College Liftoff. And I think a few families actually do use that service. But we are really fortunate at our school that we have three school counselors that can help the students throughout the whole process. Whereas I would say in other school districts where they have one high school counselor who's handling a wide range of issues, that type of service would be invaluable, because I do believe there are a lot of kids who don't understand the process, who don't know if they can even complete the process. They don't even know where to start. I know there's a lot of campaigns that help students with, like, you can go with College Board, and there's American Application Campaign going on. So I think having services like that help families navigate this really complicated process is really helpful.
What is your sense about how well the students understand the cost-benefit analysis that Erin Green talked about earlier? In other words, looking for the college that gives you the degree that you want for the best, getting the most bang for your buck.
Right. I agree with that. And I see there has been a change where we didn't speak of financial aid as much as we do now. And in the last just like 2 years, it's significantly increased, and trying to help families understand, because there's that feeling of, we want to go to a prestigious college and you want to apply to the best of the best, but then you want to be able to afford it. And so some of our families ultimately are choosing the ones that is the best that they can afford.
Are you finding that they're going to more affordable colleges these days, I guess, post-recession?
Oh, yes. And there's just been a change where some of our families, even though they can get into Maine at OSU, which has become a very prestigious college, by the way, over the last 10 years, they're choosing OSU Newark for the first 2 years, knowing that they are automatically going to be able to transfer to OSU Maine, you know, as long as they have the right GPA.
And they, at Newark, it's, of course, about 7,500 versus 10,000.
I don't even know if it's 7,500.
Yeah, it's not that many students, but the point is—
No, I'm talking about the cost.
Oh.
It's less expensive.
Yeah, it's a little less than going to the main campus. That's correct. But I think the cost is one advantage, and just the size that you talked about.
The size. And then, of course, Granville, they can be commuter students then.
Right. But I do know, because there was, you know, concern that our students weren't necessarily getting into the top schools, or they weren't choosing to ultimately go to those schools. And it turns out that we did a survey with our students, and finding out primarily it's the financial aid. What is the final package that they're going to be paying? And that's a huge thing. And so we do tell our parents and our students, have those conversations early, because if a student gets into, say, New York University or University of Michigan, and then you're like, you can't go, that is heartbreaking for a student. And so I read an article in Money Magazine about that, just kind of letting your kids know ahead of time. And I just think it's
what you can afford.
What you can afford, and just keeping everything. If it's just in state, then let's just look in state, and let's look at all our options in state. So I think that's really important in educating the families and you know, students about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, Brandy. I was going to say, and something that Brandy hit on, I just think is very, very important, is just having an open conversation and open mind about it. I mean, I'll do parent nights at schools, and one of the things that I will say is that you don't want to necessarily eliminate a school just by the sticker price, because there are some universities that have a quote-unquote higher sticker price than Ohio State University that wants all the financial aid and everything runs its course. The amount of money out of pocket that student would pay may be less than the lower sticker price cost. So, again, I just think having an open mind and trying to get as much information as possible is going to help a student ultimately make the best decision.
There's a service called Naviance.
Yes, we have that.
It's developed a lot in conjunction with the Common App, and they're, I don't know if they're directly connected, but tell us about Naviance and what the advantages are of having services like that. It goes through the high schools, right?
Correct. And fortunately, when I first started in 2003, we already had it.
Okay.
So we've had it for several years now. And the benefit would be that they are able to sign up. We give them an account starting freshman year, but they can do different things throughout high school, and it saves to their own account as far as the career interests inventory, career profiler. They can work on their resume. They can do personality tests, college searches, save the different ones. And then when they're seniors, we send all of their transcripts, letters of recommendation, Common App forms electronically to the different schools. And so then everything is recorded, and then we have all the data recorded electronically. So it's been a great service. And then you can kind of see what percent choose four-year colleges, two-year colleges, who get in, you know, who doesn't get in. And then they have graphs to show just kind of what is Granville's record with Ohio State for the last 5 years based off of this SAT and this GPA. Where do you fall in that? And that is a really good indicator. And we know that each pool of applicants change each year, so we know that there are slight changes in who you accept or what percent you accept. But we do try to keep that information for students so they understand how to view information from all sides. So it's been very helpful, and the kids really like it.
Vern Granger, what kind of data do you keep on where you're drawing the students from now?
We have data that we get a sense of students, where they're applying from throughout the state, where they're coming from nationally, internationally as well. And that will have a direct impact on our recruitment strategies. So, for instance, talking about outside of the state of Ohio, just by our previous year's application data, by looking at census data to see where students are moving to, where families are moving to, we will evolve our recruitment strategy.
Because you know they're growing new Buckeyes and they want to send them back.
So looking at that previous data, and again, looking at census and other pieces of information, it allows us to make much more data-informed decisions.
How do you think about diversity at a college like OSU, at a university like OSU, and when it comes to the admissions process?
Yeah, when we talk about diversity, we talk about it in the capital D. And diversity to us is means many different things. It's racial, ethnicity, it's geographic, it's academic, it's geographic. So it's many different forms. It's in different parts of the state of Ohio. So making sure that we're represented in the eastern parts of the state. So diversity to us is a very, very capital letter for us, and we think about it in many different ways.
So at the end of the day, at the end of the process that you're going through right now, if you find that, you know, you've got a lot of really smart kids coming to your school, but something's missing, what do you do?
Is it
just a moving target all the time? Or?
You know what? When I explain my job to folks, I say that it's part art and it's part science. And there's a part that, you know, Brandy talked about with the academic achievement, what the student gets on the SAT or ACT, their courses, their grades, and looking at that component. But there is also, again, we have a responsibility at our university of preparing the next generation of leaders. And so what that means is that we want to make sure that there are different elements of and different components of the state that are represented at the university, because we know ultimately in the end, research shows that the best times for critical learning are in those diverse environments. And so we take great pride in the fact that diversity is one of the university's strategic pillars. And we consider many different forms of diversity at the university.
Well, Vern Granger, I want to thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And Brandy Cooper, school counselor at Granville High School, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
This program was produced by our high school intern, Joel Nadler, from Linworth Alternative and the Worthington City School District. Thank you, Joel, for your work. And thanks for listening, everybody. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher. Thanks to the All Sides staff, Producer Michael DeBonis, Associate Producer Amy Jurevich, Assistant Producer Rachel Quimby, Production Assistants Olivia Rojas, Julia Hyder, Joel Nadler, Leticia Wiggins, and Emmy Beach, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thanks again for listening.